How do you honor God? By doing everything to the glory of God. Not just not sinning, not just, okay, you don't steal from people, but by making good shoes.
If we're going to talk about you were a new creation, that means everything has to change.
Why does God not just, you know, bring people to heaven immediately after being saved? It's because there's stuff to do here. There's a point to all of this. And if we're Christians, we do it better, or at least in theory.
But if we really apply the standard that's set in Scripture, then we know that no one is good because no one is God.
We serve a storyteller. We serve a God who has a perfect plan, a sovereign will for every moment of history.
It's not about going into the world to make artists. It's about going into the world to make disciples.
This is The Christian Artist, honoring Christ through creativity. My name is Caleb.
And my name is Carly.
And we are back once more with another episode of The Christian Artist. Took a break there for a little while. We were just so tired on the last couple Monday nights. Lots going on, and Finn like has like a later bedtime and stuff now. So yeah, we're back. So today we're going to continue our series talking through the Studio Ghibli films in production release order. So I guess this is not chronological order anymore because we're kind of jumping around a little bit to talk about a few films in a group. So today we're going to talk about both Pompoko and Only Yesterday, two of the lesser known Ghibli films. And then next week we're going to talk about Princess Mononoke. And then the week after that, we're going to talk about, which ones was it? The Yamadas one, neighbor's the Yamadas. And there's one other, basically we were kind of like pairing up two different films.
Yeah. What about them?
I'm bringing it up right now.
Like middle schoolers. I don't remember.
Yeah, Whisper of the Heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're pairing those up, and then we wanted to do a full episode on Porco Rosso and a full episode on Princess Mononoke. But technically, the other four films we're going to discuss in pairs were kind of interspersed in between those films. And then after that, we got Spirited Away, which I'm excited about. I haven't seen that one. Honestly, after we get past, I don't think there's a single one that I have seen yet past this point.
I think Ponyo is the only one
past this
point that I have seen.
Yeah, I guess I've only actually seen Nausicaa, Castle in the Sky, and My Neighbor Totoro before doing this watch through. Yeah. That was a Ghibli noob. But yeah, so Pompoko and Only Yesterday. So Pompoko is film basically about raccoon dogs, and Japanese raccoon dogs are not raccoons. They get incorrectly referred to in the movie as raccoons, but
nor are they dogs. They're something else.
There's something else entirely. What are they related to? I think it's like some sort of separate thing.
One of two species in its genus.
So yeah, their own little weird thing. So raccoon dogs there's a common raccoon and dog and a Japanese raccoon dog. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so they're not either of those things, but they're kind of their own little thing that's kind of a mix between the two. It's honestly very interesting. I didn't know these animals existed before watching this movie. So at the very least, I learned something new there. But they're often in Japanese folklore, they're related to tanuki. They've been considered alongside, there's a word I'm looking for here. There's some word that I'm trying to think of here that's like considered the same, like conflated. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Tanuki and raccoon dogs are often conflated in Japanese folklore. Those are considered tanuki in Japanese folklore and are considered. This is basically, you know, when a Japanese person saw a raccoon dog, they thought it was a forest spirit, is the idea. But yeah, it's a very strange film. It's not a bad film. It's certainly not one of the best of Ghibli films, but it's passable. Like, it has a good plot. Like, it's not a bad film. It's not, unlike Totoro, for example, not that Totoro is a bad film either, right? But unlike Totoro, it has like a very clear plot and progression of plot.
Yeah.
It's not slice of life. Mainly the things about it is just as weird, right?
Yeah. It's very comedic.
Yeah. It is, it's about these raccoon dogs that are supposedly actually forest spirits, right? So it's probably the most environmental film that Ghibli has, that we've seen.
Explicitly so.
Yeah, at least that we've seen in this watch through so far. Literally at the very end of the movie, the raccoon dog looks at the camera and basically gives an environmental spiel to the kids, mm-hmm. right? But all of that aside, it's still really fun. Like, as a fantasy film, it's very interesting. Has a lot of fun world building based on Japanese folklore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very fun. The probably the weirdest thing about the movie is that, in Tanuki folklore, right, in the Japanese folklore, these forest spirits have prominent scrotums that they can inflate and use for battle and other things. That's like part of the actual Japanese mythology. And so that happens a lot in this movie.
Particularly because like fertility was a big.
Yes, their fertility.
Big component of, yeah, the spiritual aspect there.
Yep. In the English dub, not only are the Japanese raccoon dogs referred to as raccoons instead of their proper name, but these scrotum pouch, like these, their scrotum is referred to as raccoon pouches, right? So they're, mm-hmm. they sanitized it a little bit for the English dub.
But it's very clear.
It's very clear what's happening. Yep. Yep. So very weird on that end, but like, it's, I don't know. It's like, it's this weird thing where like, it kind of gets a pass, like just like considering it. It doesn't immediately seem as weird as, at least the way it's presented in the film, it's never really talked about as a reproductive organ. It's just mm-hmm. like this pouch that the raccoons happen to have that they can do things with, right? It's like a magical ability they have. Still very strange when you actually realize what's going on. So that, just a warning there, some weird Japanese folklore stuff that they use throughout the films, but it's like raccoons, right? So it's like, it's hard to be scandalized by it too much because it's not humans, right? So basically, you know, the story is the raccoon dogs are they lived in harmony with nature, and even the humans weren't able to drive them from their forest homes, and everything was going fine until the 1960s, when a group of Tanuki are threatened by a gigantic suburban development project. So modernization is happening in Japan, and the forest spirits are receiving the raw deal as they lose their homes. And the whole rest of the story, right, is basically the raccoon dogs, the Tanuki, trying to find a way to stay alive, to survive this change. Lots of different ways are attempted at trying this, right? Finding new homes, just like leaving entirely. And eco-terrorism is like a prominent theme, right? So the Tanuki basically decide we have to fight back against these people who are encroaching on our land. Lots of environmental themes, you know, not all of which are bad, right? It's good to take care of the environment. It's good to consider animals when you're, you should have proper dominion as a Christian over nature. It definitely gets very, like, the most preachy out of any of the Ghibli films, for sure, on that front. Even Princess Mononoke, which really focuses on the environmental themes, is not as bad as this one. Any other general thoughts, Carly, on this film?
The fact that it's just like the plot is centered around all of these characters that are not human, is very interesting. And it's very comedic. Like, it just, it reminded me so much of, of just, like, an old Disney cartoon. Like, obviously, it has a different feel in a lot of ways, but, a lot of the, even the animation style of this one, and, just the type of humor and the way that some of the characters were characterized. Like, there's a stereotypical, like, kind of bulkier character that's just interested in violence. And, like, the main raccoon dog that they focus on that's, like, just kind of an average-looking, I keep wanting to say person, but they're not people. But
raccoon dog.
Yeah. But, like, clearly has, like, some brains and some good ideas.
Yeah, this film, I think the thing I like the most about the film is the world building. All right, lots of fun Japanese folklore stuff to play with, right, in this film. And I mean, like, it is sad, right? Like, it's like a real thing that happens in our actual world. Obviously, they aren't forest spirits, but like, animals have to, you know, entire species can die out because of our poor handling of nature. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with making people aware of that. But yeah, it just gets a little preachy. The raccoon pouch stuff is super weird. But yeah, I mean, other than that, plot's pretty solid. There's a very clear tri-fail cycle, like multiple tri-fail cycles all throughout. And even the, like, it's more of a, it's a tragedy more than anything, right? It's not that there isn't like a grand victory at the end where they beat back the humans, because this is, you know, the real world that we're talking about, the you know, stuff that actually happened in history. But there's, you know, it's a bittersweet ending. And just, I guess, going into spoiler territory, I think one of the most fun things about the movie, right? So, the raccoon dogs are trying to figure out what to do about, their situation. They send some people to go, like, recruit some elders from a distant island, some really powerful raccoon dogs who know how to shapeshift really well. Oh, that's another thing that the raccoon dogs can do. They can shapeshift. Basically they attempt to use this, like, trio of elders who have really powerful shapeshifting abilities to basically scare the humans away from the place and make it, like, so that they'll never touch the forest again. It ends up backfiring, and then the unity of the group finally falls apart. There's like a, you know, a subplot of one of the raccoons who just wants to, like, fight back against the humans the whole time, and eventually the unit of the group falls apart, and they break up into smaller groups, each following a different strategy as to how to, like, deal with this stuff. So one group takes the route of eco-terrorism, right, as I said, holding off workers until they are wiped out in a pitched battle with the police. They literally just, like, go to war with the humans and use their scrotum pouches to, like, beat back the police, which is a wild scene. Again, I'm not entirely sure whether, like, you should show this to your kids or not because of that. You make your own decision on that. It's weird. Yeah, I guess I don't have as much of an issue with it just because they're animals and it's not as, like, a clearly scandalous thing, but it is still strange. And then there's other groups of the Tanuki that attempt to get media attention and, like, reveal themselves to the humans to try to, like, you know, convince them to stop. And then another group becomes senile and basically starts a cult among the Tanuki who are unable to transform. And as this article says, eventually sailing away with them in a ship that takes them to their deaths. So, yeah, that was a weird, they had, like, basically a ritual suicide that happened with a bunch of these Tanuki just deciding we're going to basically go crazy and sail off into the sunset and eventually die. So yeah, again, weird movie. The eventual like solution for our main characters is that they join the human world because they can transform. Right, they can transform into people so they just become people and live among them. And then the very last thing we see is basically our main character who is coming home from work as he's living in the as a human, right? And he sees some raccoon dogs run into a hole and he follows them, and a bunch of tanuki are dancing on a golf course. He'll still able to find pockets of wilderness among civilization. And that's basically the movie. I don't know if you have any other thoughts, Carly, on the plot or the world building of the characters. Did you say not really?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I cut you off. Yeah. Let's see. It got an 86 on Rotten Tomatoes, which I'm honestly surprised it got that high. It won a few awards. I mean, it's not a bad movie. It certainly has it's good plotting, good writing. Just weird, you know, just weird.
Mm-hmm.
The phrase Pom Poko itself, the name of the movie, comes from refers to the sound of tanuki drumming their bellies. Pom Poko, Pom Poko. And apparently from a 1919 poem, by a Japanese writer, which became a popular children's song when it was set to music in 1925. So, you know. There you go. I mean, that's Pom Poko. We don't have a whole lot else to say about it. Again, like, this is one of the weirder films, and compared to a lot of the other Ghibli films, not as involved it's not as excellent, right? You know, it doesn't stay with you as longer, I don't think. Harder to relate to the characters, right? Because none of them are human and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely one you should check out if you're interested in Japanese folklore and like that kind of aspect of fantasy. Yeah, it's fun on that end. Cool. Yeah. Well, let's talk about Only Yesterday, shall we? So Only Yesterday is a 1991 Japanese animated drama film. It's based on a manga of the same name. Let's see. Basically, the story is goes back and forth. I don't think this was in the original manga. I think the original manga was just the kid's story. I don't remember. It's one of the stories was the only one in the manga. But basically, in the movie, it goes back and forth between the adult version of this character and the child version of this character. It's very slice of life, kind of goes through a whole bunch of just like vignettes of this kid's life. And then the adult version of themselves thinking about it. Let's see. I think I found the relevant section here that'll tell me which one it was that was in the manga. Those scenes set in 1966 with the 10-year-old Taiko, I don't remember how to pronounce her name, are taken from the source material. Taiko. Okay. Takahata had difficulty adapting the episodic manga into a feature film, and he therefore invented the framing narrative wherein the adult Taiko journeys to the countryside and falls in love with Toshio. Oh, well, yeah, there you go. That's spoiler. I mean, basically it's a romance film, right?
If it weren't for the continual flashing back, if the kid part of the story wasn't in it, it would basically just be a Ghibli Hallmark movie. Like, that's what it ends
definitely
up being.
The feel. Yep. Yeah, I don't think either of the stories were strong enough on their own.
Yeah.
But together they're okay, right? I especially liked, I mean, well, I guess I'll wait a little bit to talk, but I especially liked the ending. I thought it was very, very cute. But yeah, basically it's like a character, she's like 27 years old or something. She's like, 27 years old, has lived her whole life in Tokyo, works at a company, but like has never gotten married, right? So she maybe always wanted to, but it just never worked out. She ends up visiting some cousins in the countryside, kind of gets away from city life, learns rural life, It's a Japanese anime hallmark movie, as Carly said, right? It's that exact plot line. It's city girl goes to the country and learns to love it and ends up staying in the country, right? Instead of going back to her city life. Which honestly, that's a wholesome plot cycle. And I think we should continue seeing more of it. I think I saw someone suggest once, some feminist on Twitter suggest that we do the opposite of that and, you know, have the country boy or something. Yeah, country boy comes to the city and falls in love with urbanite boss girl woman and ends up having to be house husband to her as that's his role. Yeah, exactly. That would not work. We all know it. There's a reason Hallmark movies still exist. Mm-hmm. The children's story is pretty much just a series of vignettes that are kind of flavoring the adult story. I think the initial idea with the manga, I believe, was it's just a slice of life of this girl's life, right? Mm-hmm. But then the movie, you know, you kind of have to, it's harder to do that sort of thing in a movie. I think the framing device worked really well. To give context for the stories that we're seeing, and to make them have like a deeper meaning beyond the vignettes themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it worked pretty well. Any general thoughts, Carly?
I mean, some of the animation in this one was weird.
Yeah. So note on that, actually, I just saw a note here. It says, unlike the typical Japanese character animation style, the characters have more realistic facial muscles and expressions mm-hmm. due to the dialogue being recorded first. The tradition in Japan is to record it after the animation is completed.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I hate it. Don't do that, Japan. It's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. But I loved all of the artwork of the scenery.
The countryside.
That was really beautiful. Sure. There's lots of good imagery. I'm trying to remember what it was that they were picking.
Safflower?
Yes.
It's like a dye, basically, I think, right?
Yeah, saffron is it's a spice. And you get like a bright red dye from it. All of the imagery of them in the fields picking that and processing it into dye and everything was really cool.
Wow. Safflower is one of humanity's oldest crops. It was first cultivated in Mesopotamia in 2500 BC. It's wild. Makes sense. Cool. Yeah, no, I definitely like the art for that too. The people were weird. The animation, that was probably the thing I liked the least about it was the animation of the people. The facial expressions, the wrinkles around people's faces made them seem really unattractive.
Yeah.
It was weird. Cool. Let's see. There's a repeated Eastern European theme in the film. I think we looked this up while we were watching. A bunch of the folk songs that get repeated are like Romanian and Hungarian and stuff. Yeah. Basically. Yeah, I remember like hearing that in the film and wondering about that at the very least. Classic Japanese anime, right? They're fascinated with other cultures. And I think the idea here was that they, it says right here, repeated Eastern European theme is particularly in the soundtrack, reflecting the peasant lifestyle still present in the area and the parallels this draws with Japanese rural life. So they were taking basically Eastern European folk songs to give a different feel to a Japanese peasant mm-hmm. lifestyle to kind of show the same thing from a different side.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I definitely liked the music. I thought the music was really good. But yeah, I think the thing I liked the most about the film was the ending. Specifically the way they kind of tie up everything, because it seemed like a lot of the children's stories, the way that the director decided to frame those, right, was like this kind of it's almost like childhood trauma that kind of holds her back from like marrying or, you know, moving on with her life. There's some stuff that happens in her childhood that kind of like just she has to basically let go of her childhood as part of the kind of final story that has to happen. Yeah, here, let me look at this here. The trip dredges up forgotten memories, the first stirrings of childish romance, puberty and growing up, the frustrations of math and boys, and lyrical switches between the present and the past. Tycho wonders if she has been true to the dreams of her childhood self. In doing so, she begins to realize that Toshio has helped her along the way. Finally, Tycho faces her own true self, how she views the world and the people around her. Tycho chooses to stay in the countryside instead of returning to Tokyo. It is implied that she and Toshio began a relationship. And the way that they frame that at the end of the movie is super cool, because she gets on the train and she's going to leave to go to Tokyo, right? They've even hinted at the fact that she should stay. Like the grandma uh-huh. in the story was just like, no, why don't you stay and marry Toshio? Right. She just like comes out right out and says it. But she's planning on leaving and going back to Tokyo, and she's on the train, and she notices that, like, I think it's like all the passengers in the train around her are. Is it all the passengers or the, is it the, like, outside of the train? I can't remember. Like, it's like, let me see if I can bring it up here. Basically they, all of the kid characters from the, this is like during the credit sequence is like this ending, that we get. Yeah. They're all in the train around her as the other passengers, all of the kids, including herself, from the childhood sequences. And they're all staring. I'm watching it right now. They're all staring at her, like waiting to see, like they're ready to be like, no, you need to go back. Right. Like, and then she finally decides to go back. I think her childhood self, comes over to her, sits down and like is looking at her. And then she just suddenly stands up. And then she rushes out of the train as it stopped at like the next stop, and all the kids start cheering, and they just like, I don't think we even hear anything in the soundtrack. It's just like music for the end credit sequence. But she goes to the phone, right? And, goes to like call. No, she gets, yeah, there it is. She gets on the train going back, going back to the same station she just came from. I'm watching the sequence right now. And all the kids are like super excited and cheering her on the whole way. And then she gets back and basically, yeah, like calls the dude and says like, no, I'm staying, like, come pick me up basically. All the kids are just like cheering her on. They run along with the vehicle as she is like driving away with the dude and like, you know, waving and cheering. And it's just such a cool like sequence, because it's like all the kids, like her whole childhood is cheering her on to like go into the future. I just thought it was really cool. I really liked that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I love those sorts of things that you can do with just like an end credit sequence where there's like no music. Like your name is like this too, where you get to the end of the movie, right? And they're just like wandering around Tokyo looking for each, or whatever city they're in, looking mm-hmm. for each other. And at the very end, they just like walk past each other and then just like ask one question to each other, and then we just cut there, right? Like, we don't need to know mm-hmm. all the, a good adage for short storytelling is enter late, leave early. And mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty good, for some types of movies. I mean, honestly, okay, well, let's be honest. Any type of storytelling, you want to be coming in as late as you can and as leaving as early as you can. Right. But sometimes that window will be different based on what kind of story you're telling, right? You know, like, for example, The Way of Kings. That one starts very early, ends very late. but it could have started earlier. It could have ended later, right? You have to find that right moment to stop the story where you leave them with the best feeling, right? Don't drag out the farewell, right? But give them just enough so they end on a high note. Make sure you have enough threads tied up so that they're not confused by the ending. But with an ending like this, it's really good because you know it's like you told yourself the rest of the story, right? The movie doesn't need to spell it out for you. It hints at what it is. Good jokes are like this too, right? The best jokes are the ones you tell yourself. So if a comedian just says something that makes you think of something funny, that's the best kind of joke, because the comedian shouldn't have to walk you through the entire process of the humor of this situation. They just imply something, and then suddenly you're thinking of all these possibilities, and you're like, oh my gosh. But yeah, so good general advice for storytelling is to leave early. Don't drag out the ending if you don't have to, but also make sure you give enough to make it satisfying. But yeah, I thought that movie did a really good job of that leave early concept.
Yeah. One thing that I've kind of been thinking about in relation to these reviews that we've been doing, and also in relation to just general like fiction, is in middle school, my like sixth grade English teacher would always say, in relation to writing an informative essay, or explanatory essay, I don't remember the actual title that we called it, but an essay where you're literally just giving information, he would always say your reader is an idiot. Like, give them as much information as you possibly can. Assume they don't know anything about this topic. And the more I've just consumed fiction of various kinds, the more I'm like, okay, so with nonfiction, when you're trying to inform someone of something, your reader's an idiot. That advice can be very helpful. When it comes to fiction, assuming that your reader is not an idiot is the best way to go. Obviously, you want to make sure you give them the necessary information to put everything together. And obviously, every human being is different in the sense that some people legitimately will not be able to connect the dots, even if you give them all the information they need. But you should still, as the writer, you should still be able to give them the necessary pieces of information without going overboard and making them feel like you think they're an idiot. Because that's the last thing you want to do, is like actually treat your reader like an idiot, even though you think you're just giving them extra information because it'll help.
Well, the purpose of both of those mediums are different, right? The purpose of nonfiction is to be as clear as possible, right? Is to give information and have it not be like ambiguous or unclear. Like, you need to make sure you're saying exactly what you want to say. Mm-hmm. With fiction, the best stories are the ones that imply instead of explicitly state, right? That's why we say show rather than tell, right? Yeah. We don't want someone telling us a story. We want someone showing us a story. We want to live the story. We want to be there. And that means that you have to leave out a lot of details that in nonfiction would just not work. You would be laughed out of the peer review journal or whatever, right? But with fiction, the best storytellers are the ones that can let you tell the story, most of the story yourself, right? Mm-hmm. They give you just enough to imagine it, and then you can fill in the rest of the details, right? I think Brandon Sanderson has said in the past that he's basically like I can't remember if he said that if he's the writer or the director in a movie that I think it's one of those things. He's like the director in the movie that you're watching in your mind. And like, you're the one I can't remember which he equates himself to one particular role in the making of a movie. And the reader is everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can. Let me see if I can bring this up. Maybe I won't be able to find the right keywords for this. Yeah, I probably won't. But yeah, he had some. Do some Googling and see if you can find that thing on your own. We can. You might be able to find that. Let's see. Maybe if I just type in moving your mind, maybe that will bring up. Oh, of course. No, that's the graphic audio tagline. Moving your mind. Anyway, I can't find the quote I'm thinking of, but he definitely has a quote about the, and I think the general idea of it was, right, like, it's the author's job to set up the reader for success in imagining a movie in their mind. But a lot of that is being done by, most of that is being done by, not most, but like a lot of it is being done by the reader themselves, right? And your job as the writer is to give them all the pieces they need to imagine it correctly, while not including things that are unnecessary. You don't want to overload them with details. You don't want to be too stingy with or too liberal with the details you're offering, because you don't want to clog up their imagination as they try to imagine the story. You give them the bare details that lets them feel like they're there, and leave the rest to them. And if you've done your job, then it will turn out exactly like you hoped, right? Because writing is like telepathy, right? You're trying to literally get someone to think the same thought that you did in the past by writing it down and hopefully giving them the exact visual that will let them imagine the same thing. And good writing can do that. Bad writing does not. Anyway. Yeah, there's some thoughts on writing and fiction. That's one of the reasons that we're doing a last epilogue session of Death and a Madness, is because we didn't get that exact leave early, enter late thing down exactly right. We left too early. Like, there is a window that you have to find. And sometimes you can rush the ending and not give enough. Mm-hmm. Enough threads connected, enough closure to give a satisfying ending. So cool. Any other thoughts on Only Yesterday or either of these movies that we talked about?
I think so.
Cool. Yep. So we're gonna run through these pairs of movies probably quicker. But yeah, hopefully we'll find things like this to talk about beyond the movie themselves, like jumping off points for various conversations about art. I'm glad we found that today. But yeah, next week, in theory, we'll see how it goes. But next Monday, we should be doing Princess Mononoke. Should be fun. That was a good one. Very scary one. In terms of, like, it's not for kids.
It's very graphic.
Yeah, very gory. Like, the most violent of any of the Ghibli movies so far, for sure.
It shocked me because I was not expecting it.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll talk about that next week. So thanks for watching, guys. We appreciate it. And we're out for now. Check out all the links in the liner notes. I still need to write down an actual spiel for the new stuff, but you can find all that in the liner notes. Go ahead and check it out. And you can check out anything else we're doing. See ya.